Listening test. Task 1. You are going to listen to a young woman speaking about a family event. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, choose the correct answer, A, B, C, or D, for each question, 1 to 7. Put a cross in the correct box on the answer sheet. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers.
My sister got married earlier this year, and I'm going to talk a little about what she did, what went wrong, and what went well. I remember when my sister told me that Steve, who is now her husband, had asked to marry her. She thought I'd be very surprised, but actually I was expecting it. A few years ago, you see, she told me that she believed that if a boyfriend and girlfriend were together for 5 years, that it was time to decide to either get married or break up. She told me Steve asked her to marry him when they had been together for 5.5 years. So I sort of knew that the wedding would not be far away. My sister spent around 1.5 years planning her wedding. She chose her dress very early on, and then she changed her mind and chose a different dress. And then she found a short dress that she also loved. So she decided to wear the long dress in church and then the short dress in the evening. The actual wedding day went by so quickly. My sister, the bridesmaids, and I were at the location early to get ready, do our hair and makeup, and help my sister with any last-minute preparations. Once all the guests, including, of course, the groom, arrived, we all walked into the church. Luckily, the church service went smoothly and without any problems. But as we left the church to go to the party room, we saw that it was raining and no one had umbrellas. One of the guests ran to his car to get some, but my sister was not happy that she had to wait in the rain for a little while. After the church service, we went to have some food, which was excellent. And during the dinner, a few guests, including Steve's dad, made some speeches. Some were very sweet and others were funny. Steve's dad made a lot of jokes about what Steve was like when he was younger and very shy. In the evening, everyone danced and took lots of photos. Even the older guests and grandparents were enjoying themselves. A few things did go wrong on the day, but it was nothing too important. My sister and I's uncle was meant to film the wedding, but unfortunately, he was told the day before that he had to work. Our aunt was able to film instead, and our uncle did manage to come to the dancing in the evening, so it wasn't too bad. Another thing that went wrong was the flowers. The woman, Kathy, who did the flowers, did almost everything wrong. One example, my sister wanted fresh flowers in the church, but Kathy used dried flowers. She was supposed to hang a bouquet of roses on the church door too, but she forgot. Luckily, no one seemed to notice, apart from my sister, of course. Even though the day didn't go exactly how my sister had planned it, everyone still had a great time, and we will all remember it for a long time to come. My sister got married earlier this year, and I'm going to talk a little about what she did, what went wrong, and what went well. I remember when my sister told me that Steve, who is now her husband, had asked to marry her. She thought I'd be very surprised, but actually I was expecting it. A few years ago, you see, she told me that she believed that if a boyfriend and girlfriend were together for 5 years, that it was time to decide to either get married or break up. She told me Steve asked her to marry him when they had been together for 5.5 years. So I sort of knew that the wedding would not be far away. My sister spent around 1.5 years planning her wedding. She chose her dress very early on, and then she changed her mind and chose a different dress. And then she found a short dress that she also loved. So she decided to wear the long dress in church and then the short dress in the evening. The actual wedding day went by so quickly. My sister, the bridesmaids, and I were at the location early to get ready, do our hair and makeup, and help my sister with any last-minute preparations. Once all the guests, including, of course, the groom, arrived, we all walked into the church. Luckily, the church service went smoothly and without any problems. But as we left the church to go to the party room, we saw that it was raining and no one had umbrellas. One of the guests ran to his car to get some, but my sister was not happy that she had to wait in the rain for a little while. After the church service, we went to have some food, which was excellent. And during the dinner, a few guests, including Steve's dad, made some speeches. Some were very sweet and others were funny. Steve's dad made a lot of jokes about what Steve was like when he was younger and very shy. In the evening, everyone danced and took lots of photos. Even the older guests and grandparents were enjoying themselves. A few things did go wrong on the day, but it was nothing too important. My sister and I's uncle was meant to film the wedding, but unfortunately, he was told the day before that he had to work. Our aunt was able to film instead, and our uncle did manage to come to the dancing in the evening, so it wasn't too bad. Another thing that went wrong was the flowers. The woman, Kathy, who did the flowers, did almost everything wrong. One example, my sister wanted fresh flowers in the church, but Kathy used dried flowers. She was supposed to hang a bouquet of roses on the church door too, but she forgot. Luckily, no one seemed to notice, apart from my sister, of course. Even though the day didn't go exactly how my sister had planned it, everyone still had a great time, and we will all remember it for a long time to come.
Task 2. You are going to listen to a young woman talking about growing up. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, choose the correct answer, A, B, C, or D, for each question, 1 to 8. Put a cross in the correct box on the answer sheet. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers.
My mother's Japanese and my father's English. I was born in Japan, and at the when I was 9 months old, I moved to the UK and lived in the UK till I was 9 years old. So I was brought up bilingual. I spoke English at nursery and at primary school. But at home, with my mother especially, I spoke in Japanese. So when I was younger, I couldn't really... My mother says that I didn't know the difference between Japanese and English. And I knew that an object would have more than one name for it, but I wouldn't really know what was English, what was Japanese. My grandmother used to be, my English grandmother would sometimes get a little bit upset because I'd start speaking to her in Japanese and she'd be like, you can't do that to me, you have to speak in English to me. But I was too young to understand what language was what. So I was brought up in quite a mixed language environment. And I think it was when I started going to school, I really understood what English was because you didn't speak Japanese at school. When I moved to Japan, the most important thing for me was to assimilate, to just get to not stand out at all, because our family stood out. My father's tall, blonde hair, blue eyes. We didn't have to do anything, we just stood out. So the most important thing for me was to just kind of like fit in with all the other Japanese kids, which meant not speaking English at all. So I hated speaking English at school. If I had to phone my parents to say that I was going to go to a friend's house, I'd make sure that I said that in Japanese, even though I wasn't used to speaking Japanese to my parents. One thing that I forced my younger siblings to do was to call me big sister, which is how siblings call each other. You don't really call them by their names in Japan. You call them big sister or big brother, especially if they're older than you. Whereas my younger brother and sister would just call me Meg. And I made sure that they changed that because I didn't like the fact that that just made us even more English and like treated like a foreigner. We lived in Japan for 5 years. At the age of 14, we moved back to London and I went to school to do GCSEs. And I initially thought that this would be a much easier transition, especially because I'd lived and was brought up in London, or had been brought up in London. But actually, I think I found it even more difficult coming back to England because things had just changed so much. I felt so Japanese, and my English wasn't nearly as good as what it used to be. And I think I also had Japan's... I had quite not a naive child, not... everyone in England was a lot more... they're being proper teenagers, if that's... You know, they were all putting on makeup and going out clubbing and whatnot, whereas I was just playing tennis every day in Japan, and I had quite a sheltered, a real childhood. My mother's Japanese and my father's English. I was born in Japan, and when I was 9 months old, I moved to the UK and lived in the UK till I was 9 years old. So I was brought up bilingual. I spoke English at nursery and at primary school. But at home, with my mother especially, I spoke in Japanese. So when I was younger, I couldn't really... My mother says that I didn't know the difference between Japanese and English, and I knew that an object would have more than one name for it, but I wouldn't really know what was English, what was Japanese. My English grandmother would sometimes get a little bit upset because I'd start speaking to her in Japanese and she'd be like, you can't do that to me, you have to speak in English to me. But I was too young to understand what language was what. So I was brought up in quite a mixed language environment. And I think it was when I started going to school, I really understood what English was because you didn't speak Japanese at school. When I moved to Japan, the most important thing for me was to assimilate, to just get to not stand out at all, because our family stood out. My father's tall, blonde hair, blue eyes. We didn't have to do anything, we just stood out. So the most important thing for me was to just kind of like fit in with all the other Japanese kids, which meant not speaking English at all. So I hated speaking English at school. If I had to phone my parents to say that I was going to go to a friend's house, I'd make sure that I said that in Japanese, even though I wasn't used to speaking Japanese to my parents. One thing that I forced my younger siblings to do was to call me big sister, which is how siblings call each other. You don't really call them by their names in Japan, you call them big sister or big brother, especially if they're older than you. Whereas my younger brother and sister would just call me Meg, and I made sure that they changed that because I didn't like the fact that that just made us even more English and like treated like a foreigner. We lived in Japan for 5 years. At the age of 14, we moved back to London and I went to school to do GCSEs. And I initially thought that this would be a much easier transition, especially because I'd lived and was brought up in London, or had been brought up in London. But actually, I think I found it even more difficult coming back to England because things had just changed so much. I felt so Japanese, and my English wasn't nearly as good as what it used to be. And I think I also had Japan's... I had quite not a naive child, not... everyone in England was a lot more... they're being proper teenagers, if that's... You know, they were all putting on makeup and going out clubbing, whatnot, whereas I was just playing tennis every day in Japan, and I had a real childhood.
Task 3. You are going to listen to a tour guide. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, answer the questions 1 to 8, using a maximum of 4 words. Write your answers in the spaces provided on the answer sheet. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers.
All right, welcome to Vanderbilt University. I'm so glad to meet all of you and see you all coming out on this campus tour today. We've got a lovely, lovely hot day in July. This tour will take you all around Vanderbilt's campus, and I'm just going to talk about some of our programs and the history of the university. Vanderbilt was founded by Commodore Cornelius Vanderbilt, who was a steel and iron baron. He gave a gift of $1 million to a group of Methodists to found a university in 1873, and that university became Vanderbilt. So now what you're looking at right now is Alumni Lawn, and this is where in the spring we have music concerts, and in May this is where all of our students graduate. This is a hangout place for the students. At any given time, you can see people out there reading and playing frisbee and football and just hanging out with friends. This is a very popular spot. So we're going to move on now to the engineering school. Vanderbilt is a private research university, and we pride ourselves on our medical and engineering schools. Now, what you're looking at right now is the Jacobs Believed in Me auditorium. There's a little story that goes behind this auditorium. There was a student several years back in the engineering school who was really struggling with his studies, and he was going to drop out of Vanderbilt, but he went to talk to his professor, Professor Jacobs. And Professor Jacobs gave him all the tutoring he needed, worked with him after school, and the student actually wound up graduating and becoming very, very successful, and he made a large donation back to Vanderbilt for this auditorium where classes are held today, and they named it Jacobs Believed in Me. And Vanderbilt is the founding school for the biomedical engineering major. It's a very popular major for students who want to go into medicine but also want to study engineering. So are any of you thinking of studying engineering? Yeah, a few. Good, a few hands. Well, you might want to consider biomedical. It's very popular. Now, walking back outside, you're going to see in front of you the main library. Vanderbilt is composed of 4 undergraduate and 6 graduate schools, including nursing, medical, law, etc. And each one of those has its own library with 3.3 million books. Now, about 2 million of those books can actually just be found online. So if you never, ever want to go into a library, and believe me, I know plenty of people who never set foot in a library, you can just sit out on this lovely day outside on the lawn and read your textbooks online. Vanderbilt is entirely wireless, so your laptop will work at any point on the campus. Now we're going to move on to Kirkland Hall. This is the main building on campus where our dean does his work, where all of our administrative work is done. Now you'll notice that there is only one bell tower that rings every hour on the hour. So there used to be, however, 2 bell towers when this was called Old Main. It was the gymnasium, and there was a fire. And there were several books in here that were unfortunately lost, and the bell tower itself actually collapsed, and only one of the bell towers was rebuilt. So just a little piece of Vanderbilt history there. All right, welcome to Vanderbilt University. I'm so glad to meet all of you and see you all coming out on this campus tour today. We've got a lovely, lovely hot day in July. This tour will take you all around Vanderbilt's campus, and I'm just going to talk about some of our programs and the history of the university. Vanderbilt was founded by Commodore Cornelius Vanderbilt, who was a steel and iron baron. He gave a gift of $1 million to a group of Methodists to found a university in 1873, and that university became Vanderbilt. So now what you're looking at right now is Alumni Lawn, and this is where in the spring we have music concerts, and in May this is where all of our students graduate. This is a hangout place for the students. At any given time, you can see people out there reading and playing frisbee and football and just hanging out with friends. This is a very popular spot. So we're going to move on now to the engineering school. Vanderbilt is a private research university, and we pride ourselves on our medical and engineering schools. Now, what you're looking at right now is the Jacobs Believed in Me auditorium. There's a little story that goes behind this auditorium. There was a student several years back in the engineering school who was really struggling with his studies, and he was going to drop out of Vanderbilt, but he went to talk to his professor, Professor Jacobs, and Professor Jacobs Jacobs gave him all the tutoring he needed, worked with him after school, and the student actually wound up graduating and becoming very, very successful, and he made a large donation back to Vanderbilt for this auditorium where classes are held today, and they named it Jacobs Believed in Me. And Vanderbilt is the founding school for the biomedical engineering major. It's a very popular major for students who want to go into medicine but also want to study engineering. So are any of you thinking of studying engineering? Yeah, a few. Good, a few hands. Well, you might want to consider biomedical. It's very popular. Now, walking back outside, you're going to see in front of you the main library. Vanderbilt is composed of 4 undergraduate and 6 graduate schools, including nursing, medical, law, etc. And each one of those has its own library with 3.3 million books. Now, about 2 million of those books can actually just be found online. So if you never, ever want to go into a library, and believe me, I know plenty of people who never set foot in a library, you can just sit out on this lovely day outside on the lawn and read your textbooks online. Vanderbilt is entirely wireless, so your laptop will work at any point on the campus. Now we're going to move on to Kirkland Hall. This is the main building on campus where our dean does his work, where all of our administrative work is done. Now you'll notice that there is only one bell tower that rings every hour on the hour. So there used to be, however, 2 bell towers when this was called Old Main. It was the gymnasium, and there was a fire. And there were several books in here that were unfortunately lost, and the bell tower itself actually collapsed, and only one of the bell towers was rebuilt. So just a little piece of Vanderbilt history there.
Task 4. You are going to listen to a woman who believes in being friendly. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, match the beginnings of the sentences, 1 to 7, with the sentence endings, A to J. There are 2 sentence endings that you should not use. Write your answers in the boxes provided on the answer sheet. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers.
It's Monday when we bring you our series, This I Believe. And today our essay comes from 24-year-old Ivory Harlow. She served in the Air Force and then began working as a waitress in a San Antonio diner to put herself through college. Here's our series curator, independent producer Jay Allison.
When Ivory Harlow heard our series on the air, she liked the honest way people spoke about their personal convictions, and she was happy for the opportunity to listen. This led her pretty much directly to the principle that guides her life. Here is Ivory Harlow with her essay for This I Believe.
I serve coffee at a counter-style diner in Texas. I often see a look of isolation in my customers' eyes. They come in the front door, wander to the counter, pick up the menu, and look around the diner for something they can't short order. a connection. In an age of online chat, online shopping, and even online school, it's no wonder people come into the diner starving for human connection. Most of my customers can remember a time when the milkman came to their front door. As I serve up their eggs and bacon, they offer updates on their grandchildren. They ask me about the happenings in my life. One day, I walked to the back of the smoking section to pass around a fresh pot of coffee. There was a woman who had been sitting in the corner booth for at least 3 hours. She asked me, "How much is just one breakfast taco?" I told her I didn't know that I'd never served just one by itself. Going back to the kitchen, I thought about her rotted teeth and tired eyes, and how she'd consumed enough caffeine for 3 people already. I offered her a free pancake breakfast. I fibbed that it was a leftover from an order I had messed up. She asked to borrow bus fare and promised to return and pay me back. I handed over tip money from my apron pocket. She smiled a ragged grin on her way out the front door. 3 weeks later, she returned my $2. She'd gotten a job and a friend's couch to sleep on. She offered to buy me breakfast on my break. This kind of thing gets me wondering if something as simple as a short stack of pancakes can bring about a small shift in society. I'll go even further. Can one act of friendliness start to generate peace? I believe it can. Peace begins with one person, but spreads like warmed syrup. When I connect with my neighbors, they return it in kind. So I believe in friendliness and an open ear. For me, it starts with making eye contact when I pour coffee and ask my customers, "How you doing?" and then listen to their answer. My job is to take care of customers at the counter in a small Texas diner, but I also believe we're in this world to take care of each other.
It's Monday when we bring you our series, This I Believe. And today our essay comes from 24-year-old Ivory Harlow. She served in the Air Force and then began working as a waitress in a San Antonio diner to put herself through college. Here's our series curator, independent producer Jay Allison.
When Ivory Harlow heard our series on the air, she liked the honest way people spoke about their personal convictions, and she was happy for the opportunity to listen. This led her pretty much directly to the principle that guides her life. Here is Ivory Harlow with her essay for This I Believe.
I serve coffee at a counter-style diner in Texas. I often see a look of isolation in my customers' eyes. They come in the front door, wander to the counter, pick up the menu, and look around the diner for something they can't short order, a connection. In an age of online chat, online shopping, and even online school, it's no wonder people come into the diner starving for human connection. Most of my customers can remember a time when the milkman came to their front door. As I serve up their eggs and bacon, they offer updates on their grandchildren. They ask me about the happenings in my life. One day, I walked to the back of the smoking section to pass around a fresh pot of coffee. There was a woman who had been sitting in the corner booth for at least 3 hours. She asked me, "How much is just one breakfast taco?" I told her I didn't know that I'd never served just one by itself. Going back to the kitchen, I thought about her rotted teeth and tired eyes, and how she'd consumed enough caffeine for 3 people already. I offered her a free pancake breakfast. I fibbed that it was a leftover from an order I had messed up. She asked to borrow bus fare and promised to return and pay me back. I handed over tip money from my apron pocket. She smiled a ragged grin on her way out the front door. 3 weeks later, she returned my $2. She'd gotten a job and a friend's couch to sleep on. She offered to buy me breakfast on my break. This kind of thing gets me wondering if something as simple as a short stack of pancakes can bring about a small shift in society. I'll go even further. Can one act of friendliness start to generate peace? I believe it can. Peace begins with one person, but spreads like warmed syrup. When I connect with my neighbors, they return it in kind. So I believe in friendliness and an open ear. For me, it starts with making eye contact when I pour coffee and ask my customers, "How you doing?" and then listen to their answer. My job is to take care of customers at the counter in a small Texas diner. But I also believe we're in this world to take care of each other.
This is the end of the listening test.